Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.
Serving spiritual seekers around the world. Unity Online Radio. Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. I'm your host, Paul John Roach, as was said, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, on a lovely day in early December. After last week's fascinating discussion of healthy mindedness based on non-dualistic awareness, mindfulness, and Buddhist philosophy with Professor John Dunn, it's wonderful to welcome another person who has embraced non-dualism, a pioneer in the field of that way of approach. From a Christian perspective, Father Richard Rohr is a globally recognized teacher and author. He's written numerous books, including Everything Belongs, The Naked Now, and his new book, The Divine Dance, The Trinity, and Your Transformation. A Franciscan priest, he's the founder of the Center for Action and Contemplation in Albuquerque, New Mexico. So it's an honor and a treat, actually, to welcome Father Richard to today's show. So welcome.
I'm very happy to be with you. Thank you.
You know, your new book, The Divine Dance, as we said, reevaluates the significance of the Trinity. And we should say it's also partially co-written by Mike Morrell, who's a futurist, a writer, coach, and communications director for the Integral Theology think tank Presence International. You know, when I first came to this church 28 years ago, I was fresh from seminary and full of the ideas of Charles and Myrtle Fillmore, the founders of Unity. And one of the things that Charles Fillmore said, he said, he invited us to throw ourselves into the Trinity. Well, unbeknownst to me at the time, the river that flows through Fort Worth is the Trinity. So when I told the congregation in one of my first sermons to throw yourself into the Trinity, everybody laughed. And I thought,
that's good.
why are they laughing? I thought it was a great idea. You know, I have to be involved in the intimacy of the Trinity. And then, of course, then I found out somebody said, it's a river, Paul. It's a river. But you know, laughter and joy, you know, are integral parts of this, aren't they? And you have one of my favorite Meister Eckhart quotes on page 166 of your book. I don't know would you like to read it, and then we can talk about that.
Or would you like me to read it? You know, I don't have it here in front of me. Do you have it? I can find it.
Yeah, the quote is from Meister Eckhart, as was said, and it says, do you want to know, he says, what goes on in the core of the Trinity? I'll tell you. In the core of the Trinity, the Father laughs and gives birth to the Son. The Son laughs back at the Father and gives birth to the Spirit. The whole Trinity laughs and gives birth to us. And for some reason, I've always found that very moving, you know, emotionally moving, but also right on. It seems that that would be the way that the universe unfolds, that the creativity of God expresses through a generous, empathetic laugh.
It is. I'm so glad you began with that. It's a magnificent quote. It really is. Speaks of the relationality that Trinity is supposed to communicate. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, for most Christians, it became a simplistic mathematical conundrum, and they were sort of embarrassed to talk about it. They wouldn't think of denying it, but it lost its transformative power. So that kind of quote opens it up again. Very good.
Yeah. Yes, and you talk a lot about that in the book, don't you? This idea that the Trinity and actually our relationship with God in itself or whatever is a relational thing, that it's
that's right.
It's not just a static thing, as you say, a substance, but rather something that moves. And in fact, the power of the Holy Trinity is in a way is the space between the three persons, right?
Exactly.
It's almost a Buddhistic idea. The sort of it's the emptiness that creates the possibility.
Yes, very good. You understand it well. I wish most mainline Christians got it that simply. What's really saying is that the nature of unity is diversity overcome. That's spiritual unity.
Yes.
And, you know, we just got lost in the 1-3-3-1 and kept fighting about that and couldn't resolve it. But you've already come to the heart of the message. And it's wonderful to hear from a unity minister, because a lot of people would presume that maybe a unity person would not even take the Trinity seriously. But it sounds like you've already overcome the barrier.
Well, you know, a lot of people mix us up with Unitarians. And, of course, Unitarians don't accept the Trinity
yes.
in any of its interpretations, you know, whereas unity has always been grounded. In fact, we have our own metaphysical Trinity that we talk about, and that's mind, idea, expression.
Good.
The idea that, you know, the mind of God creates beautiful ideas as, you know, the most beautiful idea is the Christ, and that expresses. So it's like the unfolding of the pressing out of God's creativity through mind, idea, and expression. The only downside to it for me, that kind of Trinity, is it sounds a little bit cerebral, you know, that you have a mind and it has ideas. And in the last few years at Unity, we've moved more into the heart, because I think people have recognized that, you know, it has to be a felt response as well. It's not just practicing the principles, right?
Excellent. I really agree with what you just said. Yeah, we've got to get away from this cerebral mental preoccupation. It just doesn't get you very far.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, there's a great quote, by the way, that I loved that you got in the book about you talk about people who are well, we use the word sin, but also people who have disease of some kind or another tend to want to hide away, right? They have a hard time creating and sustaining relationships, and I think that's probably true. And then you talk about a holy person who's sort of the opposite of that, and you write, have you ever seen or met a holy person? There are always people who can stay in relationship at all costs. And I thought, that's a powerful statement, isn't it? Because it's so true, you know, because they've discovered who they are in their oneness with God, presumably, and their oneness with the flow of the universe. And so nobody's a stranger then, you know. You're always seeing everybody as part and parcel of you, right? So you're always available to others in that very beautiful way. I mean, I think the Dalai Lama is a good example of that, certainly Jesus was. So, yeah, I love that quote.
Well, you hone in on some of my better statements. Thank you. Well, they're not really mine. They're not really mine, but thank you.
Well, I've done a close reading of the book, so I know what I'm talking about.
Oh, thank you.
But I really enjoyed the book, and for all our listeners, it is a wonderful book, as all Richard Rohr's books are. I've enjoyed most of them that I've read.
This one, aren't you from the UK?
Paul? I am, yeah.
Yeah, it hit number one in England last week.
Wow, and, that's awesome.
I was so honored, because, you know, I do think the English are a little more critical thinkers than we Americans are, and that they could see that this was not just lightweight American pablum or something. I was very honored by it. It's really orthodox, you know.
Well, actually, I need to do a shout-out to Mark Townsend in Great Britain, a former Episcopal priest. He's the one that actually helped me find you in the first place, you know, because to connect with somebody as rarefied and you know, ivory tower as you are, I'm just kidding. but he did help me, though, get through, because, you know, when you become well-known, I think there's more walls of protection sometimes around the person.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I've known Mark since he was a very young man, and he's just grown and grown and grown.
Yes. Yeah. Neat guy. So, you mentioned that God is the great connector, and I like that phrase too. And
good.
Of course, it fits very much in with the Trinity idea, doesn't it?
Sure. Yeah, you know, and I guess farther on in the book, I say if that's true, if the Spirit is that which glues everything together, then, you know, sin or evil is to be disconnected. It's a very simple way of seeing reality that actually isn't simple at all. It has profound depths to it, but you know, we're seeing in our very alienated culture so many people who do not feel connected at all. And they're the ones, God bless them, who slip into mental illness or emotional distress or violence, because we're not meant to live disconnected.
I think we're seeing this writ large in our presidential election too, aren't we? This idea of, you know, intense dissatisfaction and anger, you know, by many of the population for other elements in the population, and you know, and then following somebody they feel is not of the system, and that he, you know, may give them an opportunity or chance to break away from the gridlock and the frustration that many people feel. Whether that's true or not, I think that's at the core of what's happening, you know, in terms of wanting to connect again, wanting the old America back, whatever that was, you know, this optimistic country where we're all in this together, and, you know, the can-do attitude, and you can pull yourself up by your bootstraps and all that stuff seems to have disappeared somewhat.
You can read us Americans a little better as an outsider. We grow up so much inside of it that we can't see the woods for the trees very often.
Yeah, I think that's true.
It's true of any
of
culture.
Any culture, isn't it? If you only know that culture.
Yeah.
You know, I think it was E.M. Forster, actually, the great British writer that had a motto, and his motto was "Only connect." And I've always
really?
Liked that.
Is that right?
You know, talking about what we're saying today, isn't it? That's all that's necessary. My late wife, who died of breast cancer, used to say, as she was dying, she says, it's not about relationship. And it always confused me, because I thought, no, that's not true. It's all about relationship. And even after all these years since her death, you know, I'm still cogitating what she could have meant by that, you know, that to me it is all about relationships. So I don't know, maybe when you get into the heart of things, there's no relationship in the sense that there's only that intimacy, right? Could that be what she was referring to? I don't know, but it's always
my guess
me.
Is, and I could be completely wrong, Paul, but what we're taught in our world is that codependent relationships are relationship. And maybe she was discovering at the end of her life this freedom to break out of all this codependency.
Yes.
And her word for that might well have been relationship. And in that sense, she was right.
that's a nice interpretation, and it rings true for me. Yeah,
oh,
very
good.
Thank
I'm
you.
So glad.
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Folks, I'm with Richard Rohr. We're taking a short break before we move into the second segment. And we're talking about his wonderful new book. It's called The Divine Dance, The Trinity and Your Transformation. And when we come back, we'll talk more about what this Trinity is. And it's not an abstruse theological nicety or difficult concept to take on board. It's actually the reality of who we are, and we'll talk more about how that works. Join us after these messages from Unity.
If Unity Online Radio has helped you grow spiritually through programs like this one, please consider supporting this online radio programming. Visit www.unity.fm and click on Donate Now. Thank you for helping us continue to serve as the voice of an awakening world.
Kintsugi is an ancient Japanese art form of fusing broken pottery pieces together by filling the cracks with gold. The resulting piece is not only restored and visually stunning, it also takes on a new life. Whatever has happened in the past, however broken we may feel, we can be whole again by filling our lives with the transformative power of God. Our experiences make us unique. The presence of God makes us whole. As Paul wrote in his letter to the Romans, be transformed by the renewing of your minds, so that you may discern what is the will of God, what is good and acceptable and perfect. Remember, with God, all things are possible.
This Mindful Moment is brought to you by Daily Word Magazine. Finding time for the positive reminders in Daily Word is easy with the digital edition, perfect for smartphones and readers on the go. Take advantage of our 30-day free trial to the online magazine, plus a daily email with the word for the day and the Daily Word app. To sign up for a free 30-day trial, visit unityonlineradio.org/dailyword.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show of discussing the divine dance, the Trinity, and your transformation, which is a new book by the very well-known Franciscan friar, Father Richard Rohr. He's with me today, which is a pleasure and honor. And we're talking about elements of the Trinity and how it interpenetrates our lives, really. I've been collecting Trinities for quite a while now because they seem to pop up everywhere. It seems that science is based on Trinity. I was thinking about the Tao the other day. You know, the Tao says the one gives birth to the two gives birth to the three, and the three gives birth to everything. And there's the Trinity right there in the Tao Te Ching.
There it is.
So, you know, it's so true, isn't it? And everywhere you go, it seems there's this this Trinity idea. Charles Fillmore, the co-founder of Unity, said before there could be evolution, there was involution. And you talk about this in the book. You talk about before you can have unfolding, there's infolding. And tell me about that.
Well, you know, in terms of classic theological language, we spoke of the inner Trinity and the outer Trinity. And
right.
The inner Trinity became the shape of the universe. If Genesis, what it said, let us create in our image. And that was always very confusing for our Jewish ancestors. Why two plural pronouns were used, let us create in our image.
Mm-hmm.
But then we see that the entire universe has this same inner dynamism of a flow, or I've been using lately an image of a child's top spinning around. It's not as much a linear flowing as it is a circular energetic flowing. And now we know this is even the nature of the atom, of course. So that inner shape of the Trinity becomes the outer shape of the world. And we would see it in the law of gravity, in all the orbits and cycles of planets and stars and galaxies. We'd see it in circulatory systems, in all animals. We see everything is in an ecosystem with something else. And that's the very essence of life. So maybe we have the mind or the metaphors more easily available than some of our ancestors did. I'm wondering if that isn't why the Trinity is becoming such a popular notion with many people.
Right, and I think people are desperate to move beyond, you know, the old verities that are sort of
yes.
Become dead. You know, that we want something that's dynamic and unfolding
yes.
and moving. And I think Whitehead tried to do it, didn't he, with, you know, and others in terms of process theology, you know, the idea that God
yes.
is dynamic rather than static. And,
yes,
and
we had process theology, too, and a lot of people thought it was heresy. Well,
right,
if God
exactly.
is God, God has to be dynamic. I mean,
yes.
how could you have a static God?
Ugh. Yes, exactly. So the idea that the flow, you know, the dance, I think T.S. Eliot talked about it, didn't he? He talked about the still point of the turning world. You know, you have
yes,
the still point,
yes.
you have the still point, but you have the movement, and there is only the dance, as he said in the four quartets. You know,
mm-hmm.
everything is dancing, and maybe the most beautiful image ever created around this majesty and mystery is the Shiva Nataraj, you know, the dancing Shiva, which is, you know, very much linked with some of the images you talk about in here about Robert Oppenheimer and you know, the just inventing of the atomic bomb and everything. And I think outside the central offices at CERN, you know, the subatomic particle laboratory there in Switzerland, there's a huge image of Shiva Nataraj, the dancing Shiva.
Is that right? Oh, my goodness. Wow. And, of course, where we first dropped the bomb, just south of where I'm sitting right now, here in Albuquerque, Oppenheimer... And he said he felt it came from his unconscious. But
right.
he said this site should be called Trinity Site. And
isn't
it still
that interesting?
Is.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
The deconstructing of this Trinitarian bonding. Really quite amazing.
And you have a nice part in the book talking about that and linking it in with one of John Donne's Holy Sonnets.
Oh, yes.
You know,
boy, you know all your English writers, don't you?
Oh, well, yeah. I studied English literature at Oxford.
Well, it's wonderful to hear because
yeah.
I was educated in it, but most Americans don't know these authors.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, gosh. I'm feeling terribly cerebral myself now. you have a magnificent quote from John O'Donohue, another Celt.
A Celt,
can I read it?
Yeah. That's right, because the Welsh are actually Celts, aren't they?
We are, yeah.
Yes.
We're all part of that Celtic fringe, you know.
Go ahead with the wonderful quote.
Yeah.
I had dinner once with John O'Donohue shortly before he died, and he was
definitely.
As alive in person as he is in his writing.
Yes, yeah, lovely man. But I think there's a sense of the numinous and the sense of the connection to nature, and also the connection to a yearning quality. We call it hiraeth in Welsh, yearning for something that's just beyond our grasp, you know, the sort of a liminal quality, breaking through the veil again. You know, it's very strong in the Celtic tradition. But let me read this, and you can talk about it, because I think it has one of the most important concepts in the book, and that's the idea that God as otherness and intimacy both at the same time. And he says, the Christian concept of God as Trinity is the most sublime articulation of otherness and intimacy, an eternal interflow of friendship. This perspective discloses the beautiful fulfillment of our immortal longing in the words of Jesus, who said, "Behold, I call you friends." Jesus, as the Son of God, is the first other in the universe. He is the prism of all difference. He is the secret anamkara of every individual. In friendship with him, we enter the tender beauty and affection of the Trinity. In the embrace of this eternal friendship, we dare to be free. Wow, there's a lot in that, but I like those the juxtaposition of those words, otherness and intimacy. How is that possible?
Yeah, you know, and so many theologians have said the same thing. They spoke of, you know, transcendence and immanence, and they seem like utter opposites.
Yes.
And yet what the mystery of Trinity beautifully does is hold them together in a perfect tension. I think one place in the book I tried to describe God as absolute friendship, big A, big F, absolute friendship. And this friendship just moves out at a, you know, centrifugal force, pulling everything in to that same friendship. It's such a different and much more beautiful way of knowing God than this threatening Zeus figure sitting on a throne somewhere. You know, as I say at the beginning of the book, and I don't mean to be offensive to my fellow Christians, but I do think the operative de facto image of God that the vast majority of Christians operate with is frankly pagan. And I'm not saying anything bad about pagans, but I'm just trying to make the point that the mystery of Trinity really has not been taken seriously by most mainline Christians. The only ones who did, and they were overwhelmingly so, were the mystics, particularly true in the Eastern mystics and the Catholic mystics, where they're all Trinitarian. And you wonder, where did they get it? I don't know which came first. Did they experience God and then move toward Trinitarian language, or did Trinitarian language give them the freedom to think of God as a flow or as a friendship? I don't know.
Yes. Yeah. My personal feeling is that, you know, like I said earlier, trinities seem to interpenetrate everything. And so if you look around enough, if you just pay attention to what is on any given day, both in your own psyche and in the world outside of ourselves, you know, you notice this relationship of the three forces. And so, you know, that brings you home to God. And you say that in the book. You say it's not that the Trinity arises out of God as much as God arises out of the Trinity. You know, once we understand the dynamic flow of the Trinity, we begin to understand God more beautifully. I know this is the end of the book, but I want to jump ahead since you mentioned the leaping. But your last five sentences of the book are just lovely. And talking about it's a much more joyous, blessed relationship than that old style relationship of the wrathful or wrathful nature of God. It says Richard says suddenly this is a very safe universe. And I think that's a good word for it, suddenly, you know, because it's every moment you wake up, oh, wait a minute, it's okay, everything's okay. And you have to repeat that waking up, don't you? Suddenly this is a very safe universe. You have nothing to be afraid of. God is for you. God is leaping towards you. I love that one. God is on your side. Honestly, more than you are on your own. And so often we do ourselves such a disservice, don't we? We beat up on ourselves. We God just loves us the way we are, and yet we want to make, you know, we've got to spend hours, yeah. you know, with putting on makeup, making him think that we're better than we really are.
Beautiful. Thank you for centering in on such important sections of the book. I'm honored that you've taken it that seriously. Thank you.
Well, it fits right in with my my own, you know, spirituality, and I think it would fit in probably very nicely with most Unity ministers and Unity folks, because we talk about these things quite a bit. And
I
was talking with my wife about this earlier. You know that you're breaking ground, new ground, with more traditional theologians and more. Traditional Catholics or whatever, but I think for some of us, you know, like in Unity, you know, this is wonderful stuff to read, because it's like, yes, this is what we're trying to teach all the time, you know, and here's a person coming from a different tradition who's, you know, discovered it also and articulated it so beautifully and with all the underpinnings of theologians of times past and lots of biblical references. By the way, you talk a lot in the book about, now don't think this is New Agey. Don't think this is New Agey. And perhaps you've been criticized by some, you know, and more serious yes. theologians, you know, serious in quotes theologians, you know, for being too New Agey. But, you know, I think the New Age has some good things, you know, some of it's woo-woo and everything.
It does.
But it's attempting to, you know, create some kind of a synthesis, I think, of understanding.
Right.
And people like Ken Wilber, who you quote, actually, you know, talks a lot about the Trinity, doesn't he? The third force thinking.
Exactly. We're going to be doing a video together next month, Ken and I.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
I think he's the greatest religious philosopher of this century. You know, he's got an amazing, amazing ability to put the big picture together.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a great, great guy. I think he goes on a little too much. I think he could cut his books down to half.
But that's probably
just my
true
personal
too.
Opinion.
He's just too smart for his own good.
Could be. Yeah, could be. That's true. So let's talk more about this, the third force thinking, and in terms of how it can be, you know, efficacious in our everyday lives.
Well, let me differentiate it, and this often helps people. Most people, when you say this, they immediately think of Hegel, the German philosopher, thesis, antithesis, mm-hmm. synthesis. And that's not really what third force is. Third force isn't balancing the opposites. It's holding the opposites until something new emerges on a new level. That's much more subtle, and I try to talk about it not with any great expertise, but my fellow teacher here in our living school, Cynthia Bourgeau, she has an entire book about it,
mm-hmm.
and she really is much more the philosopher than I am. But if you can think of holding the creative tension, and of course, as a Christian, I see that imaged on the cross, the two nailed hands of Jesus. St. Bonaventure, our Franciscan mystic, said, whenever you hold the sufferings of contraries, you know, you will be crucified. And Jesus hangs there holding, I think, all the oppositions of the world in so many ways. Paul talks about this in Ephesians. So third force is a very beautiful concept for me, and it does just what you said before, the three emerging into the fourth on a new level, which is very Jungian too. Carl Jung liked that idea of the three producing the fourth, the dynamism of the three producing the fourth.
Yes.
And as you know, I use the Rublev icon on the cover of the book and the inner pages, because for me, this Russian icon of the Trinity is making that very same point visually. As you know, there, as you remember, there's space at the front of the table for the observer to see himself as the fourth person sitting at the table with the Trinity. It's,
right.
I'm looking at it right now, actually. I have it here in my little hermitage, and it's probably my favorite piece of religious art.
Yeah, it's very beautiful, isn't it?
And it really is.
There's a definite stillness to it.
Yes, very good.
And not a worldly stillness, even though they're in relationship, they're quiet, they're quietly contemplating each other.
In a
loving gaze. Remember, I think it was Emerson went to visit Carlyle one time, and Carlyle was old at the time, and so Emerson was paying homage to him, and he visited him in his little place in Scotland, and they sat together for an hour, and they said nothing. And at the end of it, they both rose up with warmth, and they said, "What a wonderful conversation!" And
isn't that beautiful? That was Emerson, and who
reminds me of that? You know, nothing said, but everything is communicated.
Was communicated. Forgive me again. It was Emerson and
Carlyle, Thomas Carlyle.
Carlyle. Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Mm. Yeah. I hope it's true. I think it may be apocryphal, but I remember
it sure makes
that,
the point,
that story.
Doesn't it? Yes, yes.
But it's a lovely idea, isn't it? Yeah,
sure is.
Another thing you mentioned, and of course, I'm really into Hinduism myself, and you'd spent time in India, and when you were in India, you came across that great Trinity there of Satchitananda, you know, the same Trinity we're talking about, really. Sat being, Chit meaning consciousness or awareness, and Ananda bliss. And really it's the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, isn't it? Because
without even stretching, you know?
Yeah,
you don't
really,
even have to try
exactly.
to make those two fit together. It's you just wonder why everybody hasn't seen this. But of course, we weren't exposed to any religion but our own for most of history.
Yeah.
But we don't have that limitation anymore.
Well, and even the old, you know, Trinity of the Good, the True, and the Beautiful, which you reference also, is that Satchitananda, isn't it? God, the Good, the True Lover, which is Jesus, and you know, what comes forth from their interaction is a beautiful thing. And so it's the same Trinity there. You know, it keeps coming.
Of course it is. Of course.
Keeps giving
birth. Once you see it everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, see, as I say toward the beginning of the book, Paul, the law of two is inherently antagonistic or oppositional.
Yes.
And our dualistic mind, which you started right at the beginning with, loves to see everything in contraries, and if you stay there, you always choose sides. You know, we just went through this in our horrible election season, where everybody thought they were wise because they chose one side over the other. And we just don't have time for that anymore. Whereas the law of three creates flow, it creates dynamism, it creates interpersonal, interrelational, and that's just a much richer world to live in, I think.
Well, and even if you have, you know, warring factions within one's own consciousness, you know, this idea that I don't know how to approach life, you know, I'm confused, then to allow that, to allow it to be just that, you know, then and be comfortable with seeking a third option here, or just resting in the fact that there's that seeming dichotomy, you know, can give rise to new understanding, to that third force again. If we can allow it, so often we won't allow it. I think that's why people, you know, are so shocked and frightened. I mean, that's been true in our congregation. It's like, how could this have happened? This unthinkable person now has become, you know, is president-elect. And it's like, wait a minute. He's saying all the things that are, you know, totally divisive. But, you know, from my perspective, it's, you know, things are never what they seem. Let's pursue this and see, you know, what happens. Certainly, I don't enjoy some of his policies, especially, you know, when he's got to hurt freedom of choice and the environment and other things. But I don't think it's as devastating as we, you know, you don't have to go there. You don't have to be overwhelmed by it. You can still use it as grist for the mill, right?
You know, I think one of the great weaknesses of Western Christianity for most of the last 500 years, maybe John of the Cross was the last one to teach it, was any real teaching on darkness. And the darkness is a good teacher, if you can allow it to be.
Yes.
Hinduism would tend to understand that too, as would Buddhism. But we in the West we want everything to be light. And I have a suspicion and a hope that immense creative forces are going to emerge in the next 4 years. They have to. They absolutely have to.
That's my viewpoint. Yeah, they have to anyway.
Yeah,
that's my viewpoint too. This can be
good
a creative time.
Good.
Yeah. Well, you know, other people like Father Matthew Fox. You know, I'm sure you're familiar with his work. You know, he's not afraid to look at the divine dark. You know, and people like Andrew Cohen and other folks, but you know, I think, like you said, Buddhism embraces it quite well. I love Pema Chodron, the Tibetan
wonderful
Buddhist. Yeah, because she famously said, "Lean into the sharp points," but you don't have to impale yourself either. You know, you can lean in and feel.
Lean in is different than impale.
Totally being destroyed by it, and I think that's important. You know, you've had a wonderful and fruitful life, and we wish you many, many more years of that, obviously. But if you could sum up for us what you think is the sort of the essence of the spiritual path for people, what would you counsel, if you could, just in a few words, the most important elements right now for us as we are in the world as it seems to be unfolding right now? What would you say?
Maybe this builds a little on what we were just saying, and it certainly comes from my Franciscan spirituality too, but I do believe, Paul, that the spiritual journey has much more to do with going down than going up. Just to leave people with a visual, almost geometric image. And we in the West make everything into up, higher, more, better, as if more is naturally better. And I think what we see in the great mystics is an immense simplification, a moving downward into less is more. Simplicity is closer to the truth. Not all this climbing for spiritual achievement. I think, who was the Buddhist scholar who called it spiritual capitalism or spiritual consumerism?
Yeah, spiritual materialism.
Materialism, that was the word, yes. I think we're capitalists to the core. And we don't realize how much we have projected that entirely onto the spiritual life. And it has not served us well. I think a lot of the blindness we saw in this and hatred in this recent election season from people who really, and I'm not doubting their sincerity, who consider themselves Christians, was pretty mind-blowing that such contraries didn't seem to cause people any conflict or any.
yes, interesting.
Yeah, it was quite amazing. So, well, but that's from going up instead of going down. That's my only point.
You know, you talk about kenosis and sort of self-emptying, don't you? In the book too, this idea, which is going down, I guess, and rather than trying to build, you know, the human potential movement is always building a better beast, so to speak.
Yeah,
and it's not about building a better beast. It's about discovering who we are in truth, right? If you don't mind, I want to read one of my favorite quotes from. This is from Kalu Rinpoche. He was a great Tibetan Buddhist, and it sort of fits in with what you're saying. He says, "We live in illusion." and the appearance of things, but there is a reality, and you are that reality. When you realize this, you realize that you are nothing. And being nothing, you are everything. That's all. Mm. And I love that idea. You know, it's nothing and everything. It's one of the, it's holding that dynamic tension again, isn't it? You know, in order to fully be everything, you realize that you of yourself are nothing. Jesus said the very same thing.
Same thing, of course.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Very good stuff. Thank you for understanding. And obviously, you've gone on many years of journey, or you couldn't have put this together. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for being a light to so many people and bringing so much inspiration. And I'd love to visit your center one of these days.
If you're driving out this way, please stop. We have a little visitor center and a little bookstore and a little chapel, and you're most welcome to drop by.
And tell us about it for those who don't know about the center.
Well, I founded the center 30 years ago this fall, in fact, because my first 15 years on the road, I was given retreats and conferences all over the world, and it was a great education. But it also helped me to see that so many people who were working for social change, and I'd agree with their causes. Maybe it was nuclear disarmament or immigration or some concern for the poor or the earth. But again and again, to be perfectly honest, I liked what they were doing, but I didn't like the energy they were doing it with. And again, I met angry activists, people who really did care about things, but it wasn't coming from a happy, free place inside of them, it seemed like. So that was my initial dream for founding the center, to help change agents continue to be change agents, but first of all, you know, let God and grace and love and life work a little bit on them so that they could do the same things, but do them from a happier, freer, less egoic kind of place.
And you've got lots of resources, don't you? So people can find you at your website, right? Where would they go?
It's very simple. Center for Action and Contemplation, in short, CAC, CAC.org. They could find sort of what we're doing here.
And there's also daily meditations that you put out, right, for people who would like a reflection?
You know, I think it's near 260,000 of those go out every day, which just blows my mind. I'm convinced they have more influence than my books do, because more and more people, certainly a lot of millennials, they won't read long books. But you give them a daily meditation that's somewhat short and pops in their inbox each morning, I get far more letters and response from the meditations even than the books. So if God is going to use that, I'm very happy.
There we go.
Because there's certainly a lot of suffering out there.
All right, one more thing. How did you snag Bono to write a blurb for the book? I was very impressed. I saw Bono, you too. Well, oh, yeah, this guy's really hot stuff. Yeah, all right.
Yeah,
so tell me about that. Well, he's a follower, is he?
Yeah, you two asked me to give them a little retreat. And we just became friends, just the four of them and myself. And
how cool.
So they came here right before that book came out. I handed a copy of The Galleys to Bono, and he just loved it. So he was kind enough to write that blurb, and I'm sure it's led some people to trust the book. I hope so.
Oh, I'm sure it has. Yeah, it's awesome. That's great.
And, of course, as a musician, he understands the language of flow.
Yes.
As so many musicians do.
Well, he's always been a very spiritual person, too.
There's a lot of spiritual imagery in his writings.
Yeah.
And the whole group does. Talk about absolute friendship. They're really four brothers who've stuck together longer than almost any band on the scene, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
In fact, when they were here with me, it was exactly the 40th anniversary of their first meeting.
Wow.
So we celebrated it together. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Very nice. Wonderful. Let me tell you about next week's show, folks, and then we'll say goodbye to Father Richard Rohr. Next week, renowned animal communicator Amelia Kincaid joins me to talk about her new book. It's called Whispers from the Wild, Listening to Voices from the Animal Kingdom. Again, this is important because it's not just about the built environment and the human species, but our communion with other creations of God. And so that should be fascinating. But this has been an exceptionally fascinating, wonderful show. So I want to thank Richard Rohr for being with me today. Thank you so much.
You're most welcome. I enjoyed it thoroughly. God bless you, Paul.
All right,
and all the people who are with us. Thank you.
Yes, thanks. Thanks for listening in, folks. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
When was the last time you did something for the first time? Even if it's something you've done before, you can still choose to see it as if it were the first time. Why not look at your life with the eyes of a child? Children radiate joy and enthusiasm because everything they see and do is new to them. They are filled with awe. We can live in a world of wonder too. The thoughts we think and hold in our mind do affect our lives. Remember, choose to think on things that are lovely and beautiful, and you will see your own world blossom and transform. Today, awake to the radiant beauty of every experience, as if for the first time, and see the positive changes in your world. This message has been brought to you by the Association of Unity Churches International. To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org.
Do you experience the peace and joy promised by A Course in Miracles? Or are you still struggling to truly live your beliefs from moment to moment? Let Reverend Jennifer Hadley help you focus on your intent to be the love, be the peace, through practical application by walking your talk. Experience the healing live every Tuesday at 10 a.m. Central on A Course in Miracles, Living the Love, Walking the Talk, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.